Bande ham Shri Guru Shiatav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsta Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Continuing from yesterday, the discussion of the history of ISKCON, especially in America, summarizing quite a few years into just a few minutes. And the effects that had on the movement and some of the reasons as to why the movement is as it is now, some of the historical background. Now, one major factor, which I didn't touch on at all yesterday, was the anti-cult movement. One feature of the counterculture, which was the counterculture more or less meant the hippie movement. In the hippie movement, one of the major factors was the search for the truth in various levels of sincerity, but there was definitely a major factor in it, and especially a looking towards what could be called Eastern religions and Eastern mysticism. And also, there were gurus coming from India to America especially. And three of them became prominent, as I see it. There were quite a few who came, but three became prominent. This Mahesh Yogi, this so-called Transcendental Meditation founder, he probably got the most followers. If you can call them followers at all, because it's not, he deliberately presented it as not being religious. He insisted it's not religious. It's just a technique for living in this world in a better way. And by this absolutely non-sectarian and non-religious approach, he, to a large extent, avoided the kinds of problems that others ran into, including ISKCON, because he didn't take people out of their day-to-day lives. They remained in their day-to-day lives. He didn't tell people to stop living as regular Americans, and even his techniques became incorporated in the U.S. Army, like that. But it's then another was the so-called Guru Maharaj Ji, also known as Bal Yogeshwar, who's a young boy who presented himself as being God, and he got many followers. And another was the Hare Krishna movement, the followers of Srila Prabhupada. There were others also. There were Meher Baba was already dead, but there were his followers going on. And there were also the Children of God or the Jesus Freaks who were a Christian kind of cult. That was more acceptable to mainstream America. And the influence is still going on. It's said to have influenced the turn toward right-wing politics of the evangelical Christians, which are a major cultural and political factor in America at this time. So anyway, in the 1970s, what was happening, there was a lot of concern in America especially, more than in other countries, because it was in other countries also, but it was more pronounced in America. And Americans, for all their talks of liberty, they came for liberty, right, to America, Statue of Liberty, to have religious liberty. That's how modern America was founded, with the Plymouth Fathers fleeing religious persecution in Europe. People came to America, but they themselves were very illiberal, for instance, or most grossly toward the black people, toward the what they call the Red Indians. And then when waves of Catholics started to come in, they were very illiberal toward them also. Irish Catholics, Polish Catholics, and so on. So although in other countries there was no anti-cult movement, just like in Britain, the Hare Krishna movement, also it made a big splash. In other words, it became well known. But there was no anti-cult movement there. But that happened in America, that people became very upset that their children were joining cults. Oh, another one was the Moonies, but he wasn't an Indian guru. He was from Korea. He claimed himself to be an incarnation of Jesus, and he got many followers also. So there were these various cults, what they were called cults. And mainstream America, not everyone. There were people who were very favorable or open-minded also. But there was a major cult scare that these people, they're taking our children. Our children become lost to us. They don't want to have anything to do with their families. In many cases, that was true in the case of ISKCON, but it may be the other side also in many cases, that the parents were also trying to force the children to be normal Americans, whatever that means. So it's a complex tapestry. Every case is different, so I'm just giving generalizations here. But there was a pronounced anti-cult movement, and there were books written and TV programs made, and there was some, what was that, TV program or something, saying, save our children, bring our children back. There was the American Save Our Families Society or something like this. Now, one thing which really exacerbated the whole anti-cult movement was a Christian cult from America, nominally Christian. It was led by someone who we could safely, in medical terms, say was a madman, Jim Jones, who took his followers mostly from California. Where else in America? If you want anything really wacko, it's either New York or California. New York City, to be more precise. So he took his followers, who are mostly from California, to Guyana, which is a small country where English is spoken in South America. There are not many places in South America where English is the main language. Guyana is one of them. And he founded a commune there. And anyway, to make a long story short, in November in 1978, he and his followers entered a suicide pact. They all decided to commit, well, he told them to commit suicide. Just shortly to that, an American congressman had visited them and got shot dead. So they were expecting some blowback from that. And they all killed themselves. Very few escaped. And there were 900 and something Americans dead. And that created a big stir, that 900 Americans had taken their life at the word of a cult leader. So that made it seem very dangerous that people, they can just, these cult leaders are very dangerous because just on their word, all their followers will die. There was also, I'm not sure which year, what that was, Charles Manson. He was a leader of a very small cult in California. Very small cult. They kidnapped the wife of Roman Polanski, who was a famous film director, and ritually murdered her. They didn't just murder her, they ritually murdered her, and like some kind of cult rite. And apparently they were chanting Hare Krishna as they did it. I've heard that. I'm not sure if they did or not. So Charles Manson, the name is still famous in America to the present day. About 2 years ago, he tried to get parole. He came up for parole, and there was a massive negative reaction from the American public, those who remembered him. There was another one, again, I don't remember the year. I should have checked it out before. Patty Hearst was the daughter of a big, rich, famous newspaper magnate. She was kidnapped by some cult, and then she became one of them. She joined in their terroristic activities. In Germany, that was something a little different. That was in the 1970s also, the Baader-Meinhof gang. You heard of that? They were Germans, and they were terrorists, and they were trying to overthrow the system by terrorism, killing people and this and that. That was a little different. People became very scared of cults, and it was whipped up in the news that these cults are very dangerous. Of course, Jesus himself, he brainwashed people also, right? He had 12 apostles. Most of them were fishermen previously. He just came up to them and said, "Now leave your nets, come and follow me." And said, "Who will feed our families? Do the birds not eat?" So Jesus also brainwashed people and took them away from their families, left their families. At least he didn't have people go around killing others. So this Jonestown thing was a very, very big thing. Massive news all over the world. And in America, a Gallup poll was taken in America shortly after that event, and 98% of Americans had heard of the Jonestown events, which was far more than normal. If there is some big event goes on in America, because the Gallup poll, that's what they do, they regularly make polls, and even there may be a president elected, a new change of election, but it's not that everyone knows. 98% was a phenomenally high number of people that had heard of what they call the Jonestown Massacre. Actually, it was a joint suicide, but they didn't really have that much choice. We're talking about euthanasia yesterday. They got injected with the... And that term has entered the at least the American vocabulary, Kool-Aid, because they had to drink something with poison, or they were injected with some poison, which was called Kool-Aid or something like that. So people felt very threatened by these cults. And when people are threatened, what do? They run away, they try to hide, or they respond with more violence or more pressure. So the American response was they weren't going to run away. Where are they going to run away to? They didn't respond with violence exactly, but there was a lot of pressure, legal pressure, and social pressure, and all kinds of things on these cults. And naturally, the Hare Krishna movement got lumped in. That was the term. We, or our devotees used to say, "Don't lump us in. We're not the same." Our devotees made a lot of propaganda, or trying to speak with people. There'd be TV interviews, and trying to say that we're not the same. Now, we stood out as a, generally when, just like in Time magazine and Newsweek magazine and Life magazine, there were lots of reports about cults, and usually they'd show the devotees, even though as their main photo on the front page when they were doing a major article on cults. They'd show the devotees, even though the devotees were much less in number than the followers of Mahesh Yogi or even of this Bal Yogeshwar, Guru Maharaji, they called him. Much less in number, but we were much more visible because we went out on the streets chanting with our colored robes and shaved heads and we were very different to the American mainstream. And actually going out in the streets chanting Hare Krishna, it is indirectly a statement that we're not part of your society and we don't want to be part of it, and we've got something else, and we're bringing it to you, like it or not. So doing Hari Nam it's not directly aggressive, but it may be seen as that, and that's why we see, maybe you don't see in Croatia much, especially these days, but some people they see are chanting, although it's not doing them any harm, but they become very angry and even violent. Some years ago in Sarajevo, then the devotees doing Hari Nam, and they were severely attacked, and some were almost killed, right? Stabbed, yeah. Were there any prosecutions? I think not. Probably not. Probably the police might have supported them at that time. Oh, the main attackers were killed by the devotees?
No, by another gang.
By another gang. They saw them attacking the devotees and they attacked them. Oh, a few years later, the main attackers, who are gang members, they got killed by another gang, yeah. By other gang. Okay, I didn't know that. Now, the devotees, they were trying to go to the press and say, actually, we're good, we're not bad. In 1977, the New York Supreme Court, that means the state of New York, Supreme Court, or was it the National Supreme Court? I believe it's New York State Supreme Court, because they have, in each state they have a Supreme Court, then they have a federal Supreme Court. So a decision was handed down in a major case of brainwashing against the devotees that that a Hare Krishna movement is a bona fide religion with roots in India going back thousands of years. So that was a major victory. The general charge was brainwashing. They're brainwashing, although such... there were groups of concerned parents who organized themselves, for the parents of children, means they're all grown up, mostly. They're above the age of consent, or they're the age where they're considered an adult by law. But still the parents were saying, "Our children, we have to bring them back. They're being misled." And there were charges of brainwashing, and the anti-cult movements would bring their expert witnesses, some psychologists who, even though in standard orthodox psychology, the very concept of brainwashing had been refuted, that there is no such thing as brainwashing. that you can't actually brainwash someone. But they still made that propaganda. And then there were those who were, there were scholars actually who are very supportive of the devotees. So it was a big thing. Now the devotees and the other groups also. There were many legal battles. Now, it's like I say, it's a complex tapestry because devotees also did things which really upset the public. And the main thing was distributing books in the airports really upset the airport authorities, but the devotees won court cases based on the First Amendment of the American Constitution that you can assemble in public places for propagating a religion. So they managed to win that. But there was so many court cases going on which were taking up a lot of money and energy of the devotees. But the people didn't really like that. And because the devotees, it was a hard sell, the way they'd sell the books. It was really a forceful way of selling. And then what happened, devotees, this was going on, I believe, even when Prabhupada was present. The change-up. They discovered the change-up, the system of change-up, that they'd give people a book and say, hey, they'd also tell white lies or lies, well, they weren't totally false, but they weren't exactly true. They'd say, we're helping a lot of kids get off drugs, give some donation. Or we're feeding people in Bangladesh or whatever, give some donation. So it wasn't totally untrue, but it wasn't the truth, the whole truth, or nothing but the truth. So people didn't like that. But what really upset people increasingly, more and more, there was an anger building up among the people who frequented the airports, which at that time was mostly business and well-to-do people. Nowadays, air travel has become common for pretty much everyone, but in those days it was mostly business and wealthy people, the jet set, they flew. So these were the influential people in America, and they were getting hit up time and time again. In one airport they flew from, and then when they landed they get hit up again like that. And they're frequently flying, so. But what happened was the devotees, they discovered this technique of making much more money. What it was that they tell me, we're helping, can you help out? And say someone gives a, they pull out a $10 bill and say, okay, I'll give $3. You give me. No, wait a minute. Or they may give $3 or something like that. One, two, three. Three notes. Three bills, as they say in America. And then the devotees would say, hey, look, I got a lot of change already. Could you give me a bigger note and I'll give you change? So, okay, they pull out a $10 bill or a $20 bill, and the devotees say, the bigger, the better. And then the devotee would give them ones, one, two, three, four, counting stones. Say, hey, a lot of people are giving $6 here. Could you do also? And they just kind of, oh, okay, all right. And then they realize when they walk away, hey, I didn't want to give $6, I want to give $3. And then if they pull out a 50, and then they give them 5, 10, 15, 20, and they stop at 25, and then the people felt cheated. And although all the money was going for Krishna's service, it really upset people a lot. And another thing that upset people, maybe not to the same extent, but it became well known that our devotees, they would, at the Christmas season, they would dress as Santa Claus and get donations from people. Were you looking at him? He'd make a good Santa. He's got a big round face. Already said, wait a minute. Just listen in here. So, they dress as Santa Claus and take donations because so many charities, they would have people dressed as Santa Claus and then they'd take donations. So our devotees did it also, and they'd give people books. So people also became miffed by that because they thought, hey, this Santa Claus thing, it's part of the Christian celebration. Although most people, when they see Santa Claus, they don't think anything about Christ or Christianity, but it's part of the Christmas celebration, which is supposed to be Christian. And again, it's a kind of cheating because they think they're giving to help something, anything, but not Hare Krishna. So they became peed off by this. So devotees weren't helping themselves by doing this, these kind of things. They might have got away with it better if they had not done these things. Now, talking about brainwashing, well, there was the anti-cult movement, there was the antidote for brainwashing was discovered by Ted Patrick, who is an anti-deprogrammer. Wait a minute, what's he called? No, a deprogrammer. He was a deprogrammer. We were anti-deprogrammers. So the idea that children have been programmed, and they're not in their proper state of mind, so the Ted Patrick and his cohorts, they would kidnap a child, not children, I mean the child, yeah, everyone's a child, even a 90-year-old man is the child of his dead father, but they'd kidnap a certain young person, and they would deprogram him. They'd take him to a locked house and shout at him, yell at him, deprive him of sleep. If they try to chant Hare Krishna, they might put ice in their mouth and all kinds of things. Really horrible treatment, totally illegal. Who did they know how to choose? Did they take people at random? No. They would deprogram people at the behest of their parents for a moderate sum of $10,000 or so in those days, which is even a lot more than even today. It's not a small sum of money. So this was going on, and if the devotees complained to the police, in most cases, wouldn't do anything. They'd think, good. Good, they think, yeah. They were on the side of the deprogrammers. Eventually, Ted Patrick got put in prison, but he'd done quite a lot of damage like that. So devotees were, at any time, they could be just kidnapped. It was actually kidnapping and taken away. Now, the devotees, in order to survive all of this, they took legal help, and they took help from the American Civil Liberties Union, which is a powerful group which stands up for the liberties of people who are, especially people who are being oppressed or mistreated by the American government or legal authorities or whoever. They have a team of lawyers, and in various ways they try to help out people who are being oppressed. They were very helpful in various ways. The only thing is that they also supported the rights of black people. We don't have a problem with that, but the rights of gays and feminism and this and that. So it really, taking their help really compromised our ability, or what's the word, our moral right to say that, well, we don't support homosexuality. We nowadays, if you ask devotees, they'll say, well, we don't support it and we're not against it. But actually, we are against it. If you see Prabhupada's books, we're not going to burn them or shoot them or kill them, but we are definitely not in favor of homosexuality. We're not neutral. If we see Prabhupada's teachings, we shouldn't be neutral and we shouldn't be pro-gay. But anyway, it compromised our right or our position, because if we're taking help from people who also support things that we don't believe in, then it becomes a case of strange bedfellows, as they call it. Now, oh, another major thing I should have said around the other, I should have said before I brought that in, was the Robin George case, which was a major factor in ISKCON in America in 1974. A young girl, Robin George, her name, she was 15 years old. She ran away from home and joined the devotees. In 1976, she went back, but in the meantime, the devotees had hidden her in various locations, lied to the parents where she is, deliberately hidden her. It was technically, it could be called equal to a kidnap, because she was underage, and it could be said that she was, she was being held illegally for sure. 76, she went back or whatever. Anyway, then the parents made a. What happened? Her father died of a heart attack shortly after she went back home, and that was blamed by herself and her mother on all the stress from the tussle with the devotees, although he had heart attacks previously also. So he came to court, and there was a lawyer, Turley. You're still in Dallas, Dallas City in Texas. We go on Harinam in the park sometimes, and you can see downtown among the many high-rise buildings is that of Turley and Associates, a legal company who they specialize in suing cases. So the suing was for these two, Marcia George and her daughter Robin George, sued the devotees for $32 million, which the devotees don't have that kind of money, anything like that. So that was a very big thing. Then the judge, the first trial, I may not be getting the facts exactly right here, but anyway, I'm giving the general idea. The first judge said, no, it can't be said she was held against her will. It can't be. Then he massively reduced the damages that they were suing for. But they took it again. Turley takes up these cases with the idea that he'll get a cut from the damages. So they try to make the damages as high as possible, and then Turley and Associates takes a huge proportion of it, and they became very rich by suing culture. Now, in the state of California, if someone lured a child, say a 15-year-old girl, as that was the age of Robin George when she joined ISKCON, in California, if she'd been lured into prostitution, child prostitution, then the maximum penalty would be something like a $4,000 fine and maybe a few months in jail. And they wanted to put $32 million. It was called punitive damages. The idea is to teach those people a lesson that we're not making these damages just to recompense the poor parent and the poor child for their pain and their suffering, but also we want to smash that cult there. That they should be punitive, means as a punishment. They should be punished by giving such a heavy fine. Now, if they were to pay $32 million, to even stand in court, the devotees had to attach various temples I can't remember the legal term. That means if they lose the case and they get the fine, then they're going to have to sell those temples. and to pay the fine. But even if they sold all the temples in America, I don't know if it would. Nowadays it would come easily to 32 million, but in those days it wouldn't. So it was actually a roundabout way of trying to smash the whole movement. And the devotees in America, they spent years and years fighting this case. It was eventually settled out of court in 1995 for we don't know how much money. It wasn't revealed. But the devotees spent years and years. And then you have the leaders in America, the top leaders, their energy went into this. So it wasn't being put into preaching. We can say, oh, what happened to the preaching? Well, this is one of the things that happened. The meantime, as I said yesterday, the hippie movement was over, to a large extent over, and the yuppie movement, highly materialistic. The pendulum swung the other way. The yuppie movement came up. So people weren't joining. The devotees were in so much anxiety, and it took a toll on them also. In the meantime, the gurus were falling down, and there were so many angry devotees that you cheated us by saying that these gurus are pure devotees. So in various ways, it was a very stressful time, and they felt like they had Damocles' sword hanging over their head. Any time their sword can fall, and then a whole movement will be finished. They didn't know. It was a very, very tense time for years and years and years. And what happened was, although that finally came to the Robin George case was closed in 1995, still the devotees had to pay a lot of money, even from India. Well, they didn't exactly send money, but the money that would have gone to India for building Mayapur, instead it went there. So it went instead to pay the Robin George case and this and that. So in various ways, it was a great financial strain, how to get the money to fight these court cases, because it costs a huge amount of money. Lawyers in America, it's just like if you go to a dentist in America, if you even look them in the face, it costs $1,000. Literally, just to get a checkup. It's crazy. Medicine and law in America, you're finished. These were various factors, and eventually when it was all over, what had happened, it missed a whole generation of preaching. And again, I'm generalizing. But, so even if the devotees, if they had any spirit left, and God bless them, Krishna bless them, that they had some spirit left, after all of that, they didn't get totally drained. They may have felt like that, but they kept on going. But in the meantime, the devotees had become older. And who's going to preach to the young people? Just like when they were young, they couldn't relate to their parents, which is one, their older generation, which is one reason they joined the Hare Krishna movement. But they also are out of touch with the next generation, or maybe two generations, because they change us so quickly. And so these are some of the factors in the decline of the Hare Krishna movement. We were trying to present ourselves as not a cult, we're not antisocial, we're pro-family, we respect all religions, we go to interfaith conferences just to show how we respect all religions, and have people from other religions speak favorably of us. When we meet people, don't try to preach to them, just be nice to them. Hello, how are you doing? Have a good day. Like this kind of thing. Because they don't want to show themselves to be fanatics. So these are some of the points, and I'll leave it there for now and continue. Later. Maybe one more session, maybe two. It's not very inspiring, but it's interesting. We can take inspiration also that through so many difficulties, the phoenix can arise from the ashes. Krishna's more than any phoenix. Hare Krishna, Vancha Kalpa Tarupyas Charkipas, and Dubhavachapaditanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.